Hey, welcome back to this episode of The Overcomers. Here's what I want to talk about in this episode. I can feel the weight frequently of what the writer of Hebrews has written that says, I will be held accountable for the care of the people that God has put in my charge. I don't necessarily feel the weight towards evangelicalism, but at the Village Church, in my local community, those men and women who have come into membership at the Village Church, I feel the weight of that passage. And so I want to talk about shepherding and care in this episode of The Overcomers. I want to talk about the complexities of it, the difficulties in it, and a robust commitment to it that I think every church has to have. Or we're going to hurt people even when we don't mean to. And I'm not saying that because I read it in a book somewhere. I'm saying that because with a very good heart and very good intentions, we have caused harm. The first time that ever happened was 2015. Well, the first time we became aware that that was happening was 2015, where we had really botched, I mean, significantly botched what we would call a care case, a relationship that was on fire. We worked our processes and lost sight of the person. We were not trained well. There were categories that we didn't understand. There were things at play that they certainly don't teach you in seminary, or they certainly, I mean, I don't know where they teach it, but we were ignorant to it. And behind that single case was about 50 other cases where we had sinned against people and we had not cared well and we had not shepherded well. And so in 2015, after we met face to face with almost all of those 50, just with a posture of forgive us, we want to own this, we're not going to defend ourselves, we're not going to, it became clear that we needed to rethink how we shepherd and how we care at the Village Church. What kind of training will we give to both our people and our staff in relation to shepherding and care in the church? And so I'm joined today by Summer Vinsenberger and Adam Paw. Summer, tell us your title at the Village Church.
I'm the Executive Director of Care.
Okay. And Adam?
I'm the Director of Redemptive Care.
There we go. So they have, Summer in particular, has helped mastermind an almost complete overhaul of the care and shepherding ministries at the Village Church. That hasn't been without pain. That hasn't been without all sorts of things that probably are for a different podcast, your own personal Overcomers
different
podcast.
One, yeah. Yep.
But yeah, it's been trying to get a church and maybe Christian people that don't have some of the language that we were trying to introduce for the good of people. What was a challenging season for sure. But I would love to like just go high level what we've built out. Like, how are we trying to care for people at the Village Church?
Well, when I came on staff, yeah, we have made mistakes. I also inherited a recovery ministry and a lot of fantastic leaders and Mari Hundley, who has been faithful. And so it wasn't from nothing. But so when I came on staff, we had a recovery ministry. And since then, what we currently have is, so if you kind of have the care as a ministry or department, we have four ministries or four departments underneath that, some that are in process, new that we're building out. So we have redemptive care, we have disability care, we have congregational care, and we have marriage care. And those last three are things in the last year that we're like, we need to have a comprehensive plan in these areas. We have some things present and they're going well, but it's we need to do that better and we want it to be formalized. So redemptive care is what Adam oversees, and that is our recovery ministry, our care groups, our care advocates, and where a lot of the heavy lifting outside of just the, not just, but only the one another's, Adam oversees and builds that out.
Yeah, so maybe it'd be important for people who are watching, like we believe care happens every day, Christian to Christian.
Yeah.
Like, we think there's a care aspect that's part of the 54 one and others of the New Testament that is perpetually ongoing care. Redemptive care would be, if you think, and correct me, this is how I think about it. If just everyday care, brother to brother, sister to sister care, encouragement, edification in the Lord, is like a two-lane road where the speed limit is 50 miles an hour. Redemptive care is, there's something wrong in the car.
Right.
Either the transmission isn't firing right, I've got a flat tire. In this season, something's off where I need maybe a little bit more help,
yeah.
a little bit more shepherding
yeah.
than maybe everybody else on the road. So I've heard, like, I think Patterson called it like a tow truck at one point. And I think for some people, it's very much a tow truck. Sure. Car's not working at all. My experience in walking with people is usually life's okay. The transmission's not firing. The check engine light's on. It's still running, but you know, hey, something's not right.
Right.
And so talk to me about redemptive care
sure.
at the Village Church.
Sure. Well, first of all, let me just say I am grateful to God to be here on the podcast. Huge fan of the podcast in general. Matt, your ministry has meant so much to me over 25 years, all the way spanned back to Abilene and Grace wow. Bible study, bro. And so it is like truly an honor to be here and to be a minister at the Village Church and specifically in care. And we say this every night in recovery. We'll say it again tonight. We thank God for the leaders of our church, our lead pastors, specifically Matt, Josh, and Nick, our eldership, the other ministry leaders who support us. Like, recovery takes facilities and takes children's ministry. It takes worship ministry. It like takes all of us together. We have a church that supports care and recovery.
Absolutely.
So we thank God for that. And we never want to take that for granted. And so the redemptive care department, recovery specifically, we are just grateful to God for your leadership and for our church's leadership that allows us the space, because that's not,
love it.
That's unique. Like, let's not try to like front and like pretend like this is like you something that a lot of churches offer. This
Man,
is a grace that God's given
thank
us.
Thank you. I wish if you're a pastor and you're watching this, I just can't. It doesn't necessarily have to be Celebrate Recovery, but it that was just how we started, because it was in the box in my office week one. And then I had a counselor who's like, I'm thinking about this. I was like, oh my gosh, I have this box.
Yeah.
Why don't we, oh, look, there's a training in California, fly out there. And then over time we've kind of made it our own. So it's not Celebrate Recovery per se, but I, for whatever reason, how I'm wired, I need it to be a little bit grimy, man. I will get super angsty if we're too pretty, too clean. That's why the adage, like, year one was, it's okay to not be okay.
That's right.
But God's not going to leave you there.
That's right.
So don't stay there. But it's okay to not be okay
right.
in this given season. So
right.
talk a little bit about
sure.
what
yep.
that looks like.
Yeah.
Your heart in it.
Yeah. So the way that I view redemptive care is we are all in recovery from something.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come to recovery, there are kind of three buckets you might fall in. You are experiencing the impacts of your own personal sin. There is a personal sin in your life that you've become aware of, that's causing wreckage for other people. And you're like, okay, I'm ready to deal with this. I'm ready to receive care for this, put this thing to death, be discipled in this, be cared for this. So that's one bucket. The other bucket is you are receiving and you're being impacted by somebody else's personal sin. So you've been betrayed. You've been abandoned. You're a victim of abuse. Like, there is something that there's someone else's sin who's impacting you. And so you need a place to grieve and to heal, whatever that might be. And then the other bucket is just the realities that we all live in a broken, sinful world.
Yeah.
So we all feel that angst, whether it be the impact of disease or just whatever it might be. We live in the world that God did not originally design. It's been impacted by sin. So we are all in recovery from something.
Yeah.
And that's just true. So the way we view redemptive care is, yeah, you might be in a season where you need that tow truck, but at the end of the day, what I've experienced is people who come into recovery realize this was helpful for me, regardless of what bucket it might fall in. So in redemptive care, we have recovery ministry that meets every Wednesday night. It's open. I think it's real important that it stays open and flexible. So any Wednesday night of the year, I mean, we meet 95% of Wednesday nights. Our church knows there's a place that they can receive care and the comfort of the Lord on Wednesday nights. We also, in the Redemptive Care, have care groups. Those are curriculum-based. You have to register for these care groups, and those are specific. So we have, like, grief groups, divorce groups, men's sexual integrity groups, LGBTQ plus parent groups, prodigal groups. So I could go on and on and on. And so that's like a specific place where you register, you have a group that you walk through a curriculum with trained, really great leaders that will walk you through a process. And then we also have care advocates in redemptive care. What care advocates do is like one-on-one discipleship care, where you meet with someone on your own, just one-on-one, and it's not a counselor, it's just a lay member who's been trained through the Art of Care class that Summer teaches, and they know our philosophy of care. We trust them in those care spaces, and they're just there to walk alongside, listen, pray with, process with. Sometimes we'll give them books that they'll walk through their person with, but just providing people that space to be able to share one-on-one individually, that's what they do. And so that's kind of what's under redemptive care. And at the end of the day, I do think, regardless of what season you're in, their recovery and care is a place for all people.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? There was probably a 7 or 8 year run in my tenure as pastor of the Village where I bet 90% of our baptisms were coming out of recovery, out of steps, out of, it was like the community knew that there was help there.
Yes.
So the marriage would get rocky, the addiction would get exposed, brother who was 4 scotches in and didn't quite consider himself a drunk was pulled over and given a, DUI. And so then I got to get help.
Right.
And then they would come in, hear the gospel, be cared for, surrender their life to Jesus. And back when we did like Celebration Weekend where everybody shared their, 5 minute testimony, it was more rare to hear. You know, I started coming on Sunday morning. My friends started sharing the gospel with me. That was a rarer testimony than I came to recovery. I heard the good news of Jesus. I was loved well, went through steps. I'm here to say Jesus is Lord.
Yeah.
And so that to me, for my 23 years here, that 8-year-ish run was like the front door of the church is not my preaching.
Yeah.
It's this recovery ministry where the community knows there's help there when it hits the fan.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. What I always remember, so I'm a therapist by training, Adam's a social worker, so I had a practice before I came on staff, and I would always realize, you think the therapist office, we're the first place for people who are needing addictions or trauma recovery. I'm like the third stop when I was a therapist. The local church or local places of worship are still, you can be cynical about the church, they are still the primary places that people will go when their marriages are imploding, when they need help, when they need benevolence. And so that's why I came on staff, and I feel so passionate about care in the local church. So if like you're a pastor, if you're a stay-at-home mom volunteer and you're thinking, oh, we don't need a care ministry. You don't have to have one maybe as robust as ours. But if you want to be a place, which I hope you do, where people go, where do I find hope and help? The local church, you're going to be the first stop. And so to invest in this in the way that works for your culture and your community, I just, as someone who you think would be the first stop, a therapist who works with, I wasn't it. And it also costs money. And so churches, we can provide, we can fill a gap. Now, we're not going to do what therapists are doing, but we can fill that economic gap. I can't overstate that you will be the first stop.
So there's no question that we're in very much a therapeutic season in the West where this is personal opinion.
All right.
I haven't even shared it. We can fight on the podcast or off of it. It's up to you.
I'll take a break.
Seemed like for me that we were trying to normalize and take away the stigma of certain traumas, mental illnesses, and then it seemed like once, if you think pendulums, it was like we want to take away the stigma of certain mental illnesses, we want to take away the stigma of some of these realities, and then it swung now where like it's like everybody I know is self-diagnosing themselves with some sort of therapeutic language that has a whole system behind it and a whole thought behind it. And I mean, I've heard it twice today. It's We're filming this at 2:49 in the afternoon. I heard it at lunch, and I heard it in a quick meeting between our stand-up and staff prayer, where they just diagnosed themselves or diagnosed a friend.
Yeah.
You know, he's really a narcissist. And so then I want to pull. Yeah. I mean, it's possible.
It's possible.
Or you might just disagree about this. Yeah. I don't know that makes him a narcissist. So that swing where everyone is kind of self-diagnosing themselves, or you don't have to scroll Instagram long before you take a little quiz that lets you know where you're neurodivergent or not, and buy some gummies that'll help that. I'm saying all that to back up what you're saying, like people have been being made whole and healed through the gospel of Jesus Christ. Like I just hate that we're in a day that people think wholeness, integration requires a therapist. Now, maybe you've endured something that's going to very much require significant and serious work, but you've already, man, it ain't cheap. And it, like, especially if you start looking into like intensives more than like a 1 hour a week kind of show up, let me spill my guts, correct me or agree with me, and then I'll go back and try to get in the fight. But the idea, and this is why I love the local church, that you can heal in community with the gospel has been how God's healed people for thousands of years, long before this kind of therapeutic moment we're in. But I'm a guy, and I'd love to have this conversation. I'm such a believer in common grace that whatever tools on the table that God has given men, if it's true, then it belongs to us. This is Paul's argument. If it's true, it's ours because we belong to Christ, and or it belongs to Christ, and Christ is of God. So, like, if there are things in the therapy world that are true, then those belong to God and therefore belong to us because we are of Christ and Christ is of God. That's Paul's arguing.
Yeah.
And so I find out there are people that think a Bible verse is going to solve this problem in your life. And then there are other people that think, you know, a Bible verse can't solve almost anything in your life. And I think what makes us unique is we are going, the scriptures are the inerrant word of God, everything we need for life and practice. And there are situations and seasons that require this common grace category that God's given us of therapy, cognition, behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
And so talk a little bit about how we're trying to thread the needle on that, where we're very much gospel-based, but you might hear some psychological terms. Yeah.
Not you might, you will.
You will.
You will hear that. It's because we don't think these things are at odds, right? It's kind of like God doesn't need anything to do anything. So he doesn't need a doctor to heal someone. He doesn't need a therapist to heal. It's like he can do what he wants to do when he wants to do it just by doing it. But there are common graces. And so, I want to pray to be healed and I want to go to the ER.
Yeah.
And depending on what the situation is. And I want to go to the church and I want to be seen. I want to be known. I want to confess my sins. And my friends don't understand how the brain works, and I mean, I need some help with my trauma, and I'm going to go get that. So they're not at odds. We view them as these tools supplement and serve the gospel, and so they're not equal by any means. But all truth is ours, and so if you come to TVC, if you do our trainings, you will hear those terms and those ideas as a way of providing maybe some clarity, some categories. I don't think I'm probably tuned in on if it's a overswing or a therapeutic moment. I do know that information can be helpful and powerful in a good way. Yeah. And we can overdo that. But people going, this helps me make sense of my world, that can be such a gift. But when that then is what you're putting your hope in, that's when we have to kind of draw the line.
If you get stuck in the diagnosis.
Yeah, that's not your identity.
It's just the way I am.
Yeah.
I'm this.
No, we can't roll with that.
No.
I mean, that can be something you live with, that's something the Lord uses, that's not our identity. And so what's really important when you're building out a care ministry or counseling or whatever is you want to be able to name things, make sense of it. That is not someone's identity. Yeah. So that is a part of their story. It's what God is going to use to shape them. It could be part of their testimony. But we, if you just center on the thing that happened to them or the thing they did, you're doing the healing process a disservice, because now that is how they see. I don't want them to see the world through their trauma. I want them to see it through the gospel.
Yeah.
So yeah, these things, they serve one another, and we'll pull, you know, studies from psychology that I'm like, this is really just what the Bible said.
Yeah.
Just confirming an ancient truth. And it just says it in a way maybe you can hear it, and let's roll with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah. Real recovery, we talk about this almost every week, is not behavioral modification. We want to go underneath the surface. We always show it like an iceberg. So the behavior above, and then the core values, what's happening underneath, the thoughts, the things that we're thinking about ourselves. That's what we want to deal with. So that, and ultimately, that is the only, gospel is the only thing that's going to provide healing there, and safety, and true identity. So we're always going to go, okay, let's get below the behavior and get down to the core issue, the core identity. So I was trained kind of through a clinical social work master's program with children and families, and it just never felt like in odds to me. Because what I would hear about cognitive behavioral therapy, I hear about these cognitive schemas, cognitive schemas, and ANTs, automatic negative thoughts, and how these things impact our behavior. And I'm like, well, yeah, like what you
take
think,
every thought captive,
renew your mind. Like this is, yeah, that's the word of God. You say that all the time. It's like psychology is just catching up with what the word of God is taught. Tonight, we're going to talk about gratitude and the importance of gratitude in our lives and in the recovery process. So we're going to look at Paul. We're going to look at Paul's gratitude to the saints while he was in prison. So his circumstance that wasn't what drove his behavior. He still found the posture of gratitude to be able to thank people for being partners in the gospel, for showing him grace to visit him in prison. And we know a person who has gratitude, psychology has shown this, like those neurotransmitters fire, that dopamine fires, that serotonin fires. And so we're going to talk about gratitude through the example that Paul gives us. Yeah. And so that's just, we're not going to talk about it through, okay, we want to have the posture of gratitude so we can get our dopamine firing. Okay, that happens. We're going to talk about it through, let's follow Paul's example. This is what he did in hard times. This is what we do in hard times. This is clearly what the Christian life is like. This is clearly part of the recovery process. This is what the discipleship of a Christian looks like, is to be grateful in all seasons.
Yeah.
So I've never looked at those two as an odds, and that's how we teach and that's how we preach.
Most Christians I know, they have this deep longing to understand the Bible more deeply and in ways that move their souls, like to greater worship and gladness. In fact, I feel like I'm in those conversations all the time when it comes to the Bible, like men and women who love God, they go to church. Most of them even start the day by reading their Bible, and yet they still have this hunger to know God's word more deeply in its context and meaning, and in a way that really is transforming their lives. And that's why I'm excited to tell you about Kava. It comes from the Hebrew word Kava, which means to wait on or to hope in the Lord. Kava is a Christian streaming platform that really was built to help you understand the Bible and live out your faith with confidence. Think of it as digital discipleship in your pocket. It has Bible studies, documentaries, and there are these conversations led by trusted teachers that help scripture finally come alive in your everyday life. And another reason why this is one of those I really love is that Kava is a nonprofit subscriber-funded ministry, which means when you subscribe, you're not just getting the benefit, but you're partnering with them in creating biblical content that helps people all over the world go deeper in their faith. So this is one of those, like Kava gives you the opportunity to grow with thousands of others who are finding greater confidence in God's word. So you can visit kava.tv/theovercomer. That's kava.tv/theovercomers. And use code OVERCOMER50 for 50% off your first 6 months. Again, that's kava.tv/theovercomers, code OVERCOMER50. I'm constantly surprised, but maybe I'm not surprised. Maybe that's the wrong word. Like, why is this such a problem?
Right.
Like, you don't treat medicine this way.
Right.
You pray for healing, but you like I said, I mean, I had brain cancer.
Right.
We prayed like crazy. I was anointed with oil. I was prayed over by elders. I followed James.
Yep.
And I also
got a good doctor. Oncologist. Yeah.
I got a great oncologist and a great neurosurgeon and a great, and by the grace of God, those folk love the Lord too. And, but had they not loved the Lord and had that skill, I didn't pick them because they loved the Lord. I picked them because they had that skill.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't want the guy that, you know, done this three or four times.
Don't
I wanted
the
guy that has 1,000 reps and this is just Tuesday to him. Not, oh my gosh, I hope I don't jack this guy up. I don't want that guy. I want the guy that knows.
Do you know what I think it is? Well, this is my opinion. I'm going to get my hot sports opinion. When it's like, why does it feel so, why do people have such a problem with the collaboration of those two? I think sometimes it's well-meaning. We kind of talked about this. I think it can feel territorial sometimes if you have, if there's a, I'm trying to think of soft words to use. If there's an insecure minister or pastor or volunteer, and it feels like if I can't do all of this, if I have to outsource to a therapist, if I have to pull in supporting material to go, oh, this isn't just morality, there's a brain thing going on. It can feel territorial. It can feel like you're missing something. When I would talk with pastors a lot about this when I was counseling, I would hear this a lot. Well-meaning, but when we were talking about even abuse and divorce and remarriage and ideas about domestic violence, it would be, we don't want that. We're not going to separate. People can't divorce. Not on my watch. It's not going to happen on my watch. And I would be like, whose watch? Yeah. Whose watch are we on? I'm with the guy outside of time. Help me out here.
Yeah.
And what I understand is they do feel the weight of shepherding in their flock. So it's, but they're, I think sometimes it does feel, you have to really check. I have to check my own territory. And like, this is not mine and any insecurity. So that's, I think when that cycle happens, possibly that could be underneath it.
I want to pay more attention to it when I get kind of the skeptical questions from other pastors. I'm curious.
I mean,
I know enough to know I could be wrong about things. And so we'll see. Let's have this conversation because it's kind of fun.
All right, let's do it.
Not fun, but anyone who tries to do this will appreciate this aspect. Okay. Why is this so messy and so complex?
Oof.
Right. Let me take this off the table.
Yeah.
Because sin is messy.
Sin is messy.
So
people
I'm not
going to
let us. I don't want to stay at the high level theology answer. I want to just look, let's have a real conversation about how hard this is to care for people and shepherd people, maybe especially people who have been through really painful or difficult things or are currently in really painful or difficult things. Mm. Their sin, someone else's sin.
Yeah. The first thing I think about is one of the reasons it's difficult in general is many of us haven't done our own work yet. We haven't done our own story work. We are bringing things to the table that we're unaware of. And so when we are hit with differences, things that surprise us, that shock us, we respond in a place of polarization. We don't recognize how to build a bridge there between this difference. We don't know what triggers us. And so that's one of the reasons why it can get so complex is because many of us trying to do the work haven't actually done our own work ourselves. And so that's why that's one of our values is for all of our leaders to do their own work, to have got work through their own process. It doesn't have to be they've gone through the steps process, but they've had to do work.
Yeah.
There had to have been fruit in their lives from the work that they've done. So I think that's one reason why it gets messy.
Yeah. Certainly my own testimony would be in the early years, I could feel certain things trigger things in me.
Right.
And I didn't know what to do with that. And so I would, what we call now power up.
Yeah.
Which isn't really, my powering up isn't really becoming a bully or being a, but then I just kind of get real resolved about what I'm seeing and experiencing. And then, you know, other possibilities vanish.
Sure.
And I mean, that's part of what.
Yeah.
Led to having to sit down with 50 people and say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So that's a good word.
Yeah.
Y'all want me to rattle off some?
Yeah.
And go fast? Here's why. But outside of sin, people are messy, all that stuff. Here's some real practical things. When you're working in the local church, man, you got a lot of cooks in the kitchen and you don't identify who's in charge.
Yeah.
And so that gets messy.
That's good.
Because then maybe on purpose, maybe unknowingly, you have triangulation, you'll have gossip. Someone thought they were running with it and then someone forgot. And it's kind of like, who's running this? Who's creating order? It sounds like, you know, we want to have a trauma-informed care ministry. And you think that's like all these deep trainings. It's like, no, you have to answer your phone and return your emails. It is to create chaos is the opposite of care and trauma-informed. Yep. So having processes, having a lot of cooks in the kitchen. I think we also, it's hard, just the how we work as humans, we put people in categories quickly, and we don't, it's hard to tolerate people being nuanced. It's a lot of mental and emotional work to see every person you encounter is layered and, you know, it's either they're a monster, they're the hero, they're the victim, they're the perpetrator, and to continually, week after week, go, this is a person that is layered and nuanced. That is, it's just a lot of work. And it's just easier to go, I don't like them.
Yeah.
Or they're doing this, and to categorize them and move on. So I think those are two of the reasons. And then I think, yeah, when you get outside of your scope as a church staff, you are going to create mess. And so just knowing this is what we are doing at our church. This is our competency. These are our boundaries. You can't do all things. And so if you don't know that and communicate that, you're going to harm people. So a lot of those were tactical things, but that is sometimes harder in a church world than like getting into people's stories.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Go.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is it takes time. Recovery, it takes time, and that's hard for us, especially in our culture. We want everything so quickly. We want a program in 12 weeks that's going to fix us.
Yeah.
And like, it's just not that simple. So like, I was walking with a brother just last week, and he betrayed his wife a year ago. And what I said to him a year ago was, don't let it surprise you that from a year from now, your wife's still going to struggle with that betrayal. Yeah. You're going to work through this recovery process. I know you. I believe in you. I think you're going to do it. She's still going to struggle with that betrayal a year from now, because betrayal trauma is real and these things have impacts, and she'll be triggered by things she's not even know she's triggered by, but that gets confusing. So then that wife complains to a well-meaning elder or leader or group leader or whoever it might be about her husband, and they'll say something like, well, that was like a year ago and he has done all of these things. You know, you need to work on your forgiveness.
Are you stuck? Are you stuck?
Yeah, are you stuck? Are you stuck?
Well-meaning, but that's why
it's complex, because it's like, man, it takes time. Recovery takes time. The healing process through trauma takes time. And we're not great at waiting. And we're not great sometimes at listening and going, oh, what is she really needing? What is he really needing right now? Yeah. It might not, she has gone through a forgiveness process. Shoot, she's still with him.
Yeah.
A year after the betrayal. What other evidence of forgiveness?
Yeah, where's our bar?
Do you need, she's just, this takes time.
Yeah.
And I think we struggle with that. And then, yeah, that's one of the reasons why it feels complex when it's really pretty simple. It takes time. We have to be patient with it, but that's hard for us.
Yeah. Now, I would say, especially if you're a pastor or ministry leader and you're listening to this, like if you feel out of your depth, you probably are. And I would encourage you to take advantage of subject matter experts on that field. I think in regards to domestic violence, sexual abuse, those kinds of things, that there are people that are, they're coming in with a ton more knowledge and training about all the aspects of what happens in that space versus what you might feel is, I'm not even sure if this is the right advice. Like one of the things as we started doing training is I just remember being heartbroken at how many women I actually put in harm's way by trying to stand up for them, where I would confront a husband with the word of God.
Right.
Well, he's going back home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I needed some help, well-meaning, knew the word, tried to bring the word to bear on a stubborn, violent man.
Yeah.
And I am unaware of where that actually led to violence. But in the training, when we were learning that, I was like, oh my gosh, I've done that 20 times.
Yeah.
So if you feel out of your depth, it's okay. Right. We're not meant to be the answer for everyone and everything by the grace of God.
Yeah.
There are people around us gifted to us.
That's right.
That can help serve these spaces in ways that are probably going to yield better fruitfulness than me stumbling through it and causing a lot more harm than help, which is, I had met a pastor that's like, I'm looking to harm more than help.
That's right.
Yeah, never.
Motivation is pure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always tell churches, like, think of it through the strength perspective. You have therapists in your congregation. You have social workers in your congregation. You have people who have worked the recovery process in your congregation. You have people who are sponsoring people in AA groups in your congregation. You have people already present that can help you. So think about through the strength. You don't have to have all the answers. So like one thing that we ran into, at least I've bumped into a few times that Summer's been really helpful with when she started, was not all marriages that are on fire need marriage care. So, right. So actually what they need is they need one of the spouses has an addiction. They need to deal with that addiction before we just throw them into a marriage group. And so I think oftentimes if you're just not thinking through that lens, you're like, oh, this marriage is on fire. Go to re-engage, go to a marriage group. Instead of going, wait, maybe there's abuse dynamics happening, maybe there's addiction happening, and there needs to be individual care first before we move into marriage care. And that's what experts and people in your congregation can help you think through.
You know, Lindsay Inningenberg, who was on the Overcomer season one, she said this on the podcast, and it's been a few years now, I still can't. When her and Ben were in a really low, dark place because Ben was an alcoholic, she kept talking to people about the trouble they were having in their marriage. And she wasn't outing him. She didn't want to dishonor him. But her testimony was she just kept being put in the wrong room because the issue Ben's alcoholism, not their marriage.
Yep, there you go.
And it was like it was actually one of our elders that finally said to her, this isn't a marriage problem. This is an alcohol problem.
Yeah.
So now that we know that, let's approach it this way. It was like that was the grace for an elder. It was Sten.
Yeah.
To say, hey, this is not a marriage issue.
Yeah.
This is alcoholism. That we'll be pilling around in your marriage forever if that doesn't get handled. Yeah. So that's a good word. That actually happens a lot.
For sure.
You're feeling the fruit of the addiction in the marriage, but it's not the root. The root is something else.
Yeah.
And so that's a good word.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. Can we talk a bit about church hurt?
Yeah, let's do it.
When I have listened to the stories, I have read them, I have watched the videos, I've tried to get into kind of the deconstruction church hurt thing, because I know that unwittingly I have hurt people. But the stories that I have read, heard, come across, will oftentimes, the origin of the deconstruction will oftentimes be a botched attempt at caring for. I think if I'm putting on my what do I know about church folk, really well-meaning attempts that probably oversimplify, that are probably a little bit naive, that are probably, you know, just slap Romans 8:28 on it and quit crying. Let me ask two questions. What are some of the more common mistakes that are made as we're trying to care for really hurting people? So I'm not talking general care.
Okay.
I'm talking capital T trauma.
Yeah.
I'm talking 2 decades of emotional abuse at the hands of a husband. Manipulation, gaslighting, all the terms that, like, I don't like to hear the terms either. I just know what they are.
Yeah.
What are some of the most common mistakes in the church world in particular for how you're approaching people or trying to, well-meaningly, trying to love people who are in a tough spot?
Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to kind of go random, not in particular order. I think a common one that I will see is, and again, these are all under the category of well-meaning, the defense mechanism of minimizing. And so minimization is the light form of denial. And so when you have a pastor, a minister, a lead team who is uncomfortable. They haven't done their work. They're uncomfortable with emotions. They're uncomfortable with brokenness and long-term recovery. And they hear a story that is intense or traumatic, or they don't have a category for it. There can be a desire to minimize and kind of go, well, you know, he, or you know, she didn't mean, or, and to start interpret what happened through the lens of minimization, whatever that motivation is. And that is crushing, because then the kind of the dot from that is, I'm not believed. Or the person who's sharing then moves into a hypervigilance of, I need to prove that this happened to me. And then they kind of are operating out of that someone believed me trauma, recreating that. And so it starts with, well, was it really that bad? Or I haven't known him to act like that. Or, you know, life was hard for me as a kid too. And I'm being super general and high level, but I think that is, it starts small, but then people will learn, oh, I'm not believed here. I can't tell my story here. And when you feel like church is no longer a place or isn't a place you can just be you, you know, that's when people leave and find other places of belonging with false stories. So I would say that would be the first one. I have others, but I want to give you a chance to jump in. I said it's kind of as a sub point in here, but believing people. And that is when you say that, I'm always like, everyone, deep breath. It doesn't mean we believe everything everyone says at all times, but when victims or when people who have been through something awful come forward, and they have to justify, they have to tell their story in front of a few different people because we moved them through a system, and they're just not believed. We don't trust that is when someone's like, oh, that, I mean, that really undercuts their identity almost. I was like, I'm a member here of this family of God, and I'm saying I was injured and people don't believe me. That is disorienting. And so those are usually the two big ones that I see when you're talking about big T trauma. I would say the third not meaning low impact, but a more tactical one is just lack of follow through. Mm-hmm. Listening to someone's story and asking them questions and having them be really vulnerable, and then maybe meeting with them once more, and then that's it. And so it's kind of like you're on an operating table. You can't go deeper than you're willing to go in longevity and width. And so people are like, well, I told my pastor, and they just kind of just fizzled out. And that is the start of the deterioration.
How do you, I think this is a hard question.
Let's do it.
But you're brilliant.
Yeah.
On the believing point, in like real life ministry, I have learned that there are always three stories to any given, like if I'm taking a husband and wife, I've got his, hers, and then God's. Like three different stories of what's going on. How do you navigate a situation where his story and her story seem like these are two wildly different perspectives this thing, and without really having like a full body of knowledge of maybe even history of how we got to this point, other than what we talk about as we're together? How do you, is it just a gift of discernment? Are there practical things? Yes, yes, yes. I want to believe, but then in the moment, believe who?
You believe the person who's saying they're hurt.
Okay.
And that's just the bottom line. And so I think it's like less than 2% of allegations are false. And so again, when we say believe them, it's not like, this is being written in stone. What we're saying is someone in our care is raising their hand and saying, I am not safe at home and this person is harming me. Now, the truth is that's not going to happen. Rarely does someone walk in my office and go, hey, I'm being harmed by my spouse. It's usually a really long winding road of someone deteriorating. And then finally they're like, guess what? And the amount of shame that happens when you say, this is what's happening in my home. So for those small minority of people who might be falsifying that, that's not what I'm really interested in. But if a member says, I'm being hurt, and this is the person that's doing it, the person who's supposed to be the most, like, you know, cherish me at the highest level, it's, okay, what do we need to do next?
Yeah.
And so I personally don't, and I'm curious your answer, I don't start with, what story's right, what's happening. It's, and I'm not making choices for her.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you said you're scared, you said you're upset. What do you want to do next? And I just support her agency along the way. That takes me out of being the judge, jury, and decision maker. And through that, I'm empowering her to decipher her reality. And I have had some women who have said, this is happening at home, I don't like this. And then they've made sense of it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's great. That's a big generalization.
Yeah.
But typically, you believe her.
Yeah.
You believe her.
There's no hurt like church hurt, right?
Nope.
Yeah, you do. You believe those who are hurting. What I've historically tried to do in ministry is let both people know that I'm for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I am. I'm for both. I don't pretend to be in the house with them and know all things about the dynamics that they're dealing with. But yeah, if you're hurting, I want to listen to you. I want to be empathetic to you. And I want to believe you knowing that that's real. Like you are hurting, you feel unsafe, but I'm for both people. And I want to point both people to Jesus. Yeah. I remember my first question you guys asked me when hiring me, it was something around what verse would drive the care and recovery ministry at TVC. And I immediately thought of John 10:10, like the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But Jesus came to bring us like life and an abundance of life. So I'm pointing people to the good shepherd.
Yeah.
I'm pointing both people to the good shepherd. Say, hey, there's an abundance. There's a life you're not experiencing right now. And I want to help you jump on that pathway. And so in the moment, I'm not so concerned about going, okay, I got to figure out who exactly is telling the truth and what exactly is true. I'm like, okay, you're hurting. I want to put you in the pathway of healing with the good shepherd.
Yeah.
I'm seeing what you're saying and your pain and I want to put you on that pathway. And then again, it takes time. And then the follow-up is where a lot of the hurt comes from. That's why Ephesians 4 is the way that we have to set up our ministry, where we equip the saints for the work of ministry so that there can be unity and there can be maturity within the body. And that's how we're trying to set it up, because I have found that's where a lot of church hurt happens, where it's like someone comes to you and they're wanting you, minister, pastor, to be that primary care person for them. And it's not sustainable. Yeah. Like it's just not sustainable for any of us. Like I have my few.
Yeah.
I have my guys and I'm like, okay, like you're mine. Yeah. Like you're mine. But I want to do that for all people. I just can't. So then you have to have a good process in place where it's like, this is where we have great leaders and great coaches and great deacons that we can pass them, not pass them like we're passing them to them, but we're going, hey, there is someone, care advocates. There is someone who can shepherd you and continue to point you to that good shepherd. And then we're going to be there alongside of you. And a lot of times, Matt, like the truth is like time kind of shows it.
Time shows.
Yeah, you know.
Time shows for sure.
As you know.
Yeah.
So it's like in that moment, I'm like, all right, well, okay, let's go.
And truth's always... It's an onion, man. It's just like the first thing that gets brought up in the thing.
Never.
And
never.
So we'll know in time, but that's a good word.
Yeah. But I do want to say the last thing. That's why I think in 2015, when you guys apologized and you stood up and you gave their sermon, you apologized. So many people have said something to me about that specific date and the posture of the elders and the lead pastors. I would say since then, but probably even before then, but willing to go own when they make mistakes. And I think like for churches, if you're not willing to do that, like if you're not willing to say, hey, we're sorry that we hurt you in these ways, that like there's no way forward without that. So within church hurt, we have to have an eldership and a leadership who's willing to own, like, and not just confess it, but repent and turn and make changes. And that my experience is that's who you guys are.
Well,
and that helps within people who have been hurt.
Yeah. Well, praise God. Yeah. I kind of always end these episodes the same way, where like I know like where I listen to podcasts. Mm. And so I know like right now somebody's on a run or someone's on, you know, the treadmill walking or they're in the car by themselves, or it's a tough season and they couldn't sleep and they woke up and they saw this off to the side on YouTube and clicked it or all sorts of providential ways the Lord kind of gets ears and eyes, which I always kind of giggle about a little bit. So to the person who's listening, and I'll kind of create that, they're either someone who is in need of care right now, or they're someone who has authority and leadership position that could move the needle of care at their local church.
Yeah.
Why don't you both say just a little bit to both of those people?
So to pastors and elders and leaders the first thing I would say is you need to have some kind of care, some kind of recovery program. It's also going to change the DNA of your church, which will be a good thing. Any church that has a thriving recovery or care program talks about how it's impacted the church.
Sure.
And so it comes with a cost. You have to count the cost because it impacts every part of your ministry. There's been church splits that have happened where it's like a recovery ministry has come in and they hadn't counted the cost. They weren't all really on board with it. And the way it impacted the children's ministry caused problems because now they're having different issues in the children's ministry than they're used to. And half the congregation now leaves. Like, these things are real. They happen. But I would just say it's worth it. It's worth it. So to the pastors, to the elders and the leaders, I would say it's worth it. There's help out there. There's places out there. Start somewhere. Yeah. You don't even have there's a pastor in Amarillo who he started by just doing his own group of men.
Yeah.
And his theme was take off the mask. So, and that's how it started.
Yeah.
That's how this ministry started, where it's this group of men going, hey, we're just going to get used to taking off the mask and being vulnerable with each other. And it started from there. So start somewhere. Yeah. That's what I would say to elders and leaders and pastors, to people out there. There's hope. Yeah. We deal hope. That's what we do. That's one of our sayings. We hope dealers. There is hope. You say it in Art of Care. The way that you heal is through relationships, therapeutic safe relationships, and hope. Right? That's how. And so the opposite, we always say, is the opposite of addiction is connection. But really the truth is the opposite of anything, addiction or any other kind of sin, is relationships. Relationship with our God and relationship with others. And in those relationships within Christ, there is hope. And so if whatever you might be going through, that thief has come to try to steal, kill, and destroy, but there is an abundance of life for you. And so, go check out a local church. Get on the Celebrate Recovery website. Just search recovery churches in the area. Find a place. Ask a local therapist of a churches that have recovery ministries. Find a church that can offer you that hope.
That's good.
Okay, so if I'm thinking to the people, you're like, I have a heart for this. I want this in my church, or my church is currently doing this. How do I grow it? You can listen to something like this, you start to feel overwhelmed, and you can go, we have a trauma therapist and we don't have these kind of resources. Your care ministry will be successful and will win. Not if you have the best trauma informed. Can you hold space and bear witness to someone's story well? So you should be talking the least. You should be asking appropriate, safe questions and just bearing witness to someone's story. And so that would be, if you're like, oh, I don't know where to start, just start there. It's not, counseling and care is not giving advice. It is, I see you, I can hold space for your story and not project onto it. So don't be overwhelmed. Start there. To the person who's listening going, I am drowning and I don't know where to go, I'm praying for you. And I would say start praying for a safe local church to just raise your hand and go, I need some support. And I'm going to say, trust your gut on finding a healthy, safe church. If you go somewhere and it feels weird, leave.
Yeah.
Leave. You can trust some of your intuitions as you're trying to receive care. Adam stole what I was going to say. The hope. No, he didn't, but I wanted to.
I knew you were going to say that, though.
I know.
I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing.
How many answers will there be?
Listen, I usually, if you give me a mic, I'm going. I'm going. There's one person who sees me and likes me and is for me. And that's how you can have a good starting point for a care ministry. Yeah.
Let me say this as we end this, this episode. All the data says it is a spiritually and at a soul level, throw the mental aspect in there, a difficult time to be alive. The comfort that we thought would solve it has not solved it.
Right.
It appears has made it worse. So there is a hurting that's predominant in the culture. It's masked over really well with trinkets and toys and opportunity and information. And what an opportunity for the church to be that place for the banged up, busted, can't do it anymore men and women of our communities. But there has to be, one, a willingness to be that and not be a country club.
Yeah.
There has to be, I mean, this is what the book says. The book says, if you don't have any oxen, you don't have to worry about pooping the stalls. Yeah. That's my own version. That's the Matt Chandler version.
That'll preach.
But if you have oxen, the stall's going to be dirty. Yep. That's why I said I need it.
Gotta be lived in.
If I'm looking up and everybody's okay and everybody's, then I will, man, I get something happens.
You throw a grenade just to get something.
I will throw a grenade. I can't. Because I know it's not true.
It's not true. That's right,
and
not
I got saved in some spaces
right.
like that.
Yeah. Right.
And that probably did more harm to me than anything else.
The veneer. Like,
so I'm the only one struggling with this? I'm the only one that doesn't get this? I'm the only one, which was isolating, which is how you get yourself killed. And so what an opportunity we have in this moment where all the data says people are lonely, people are bent inward, they're depressed, they're anxious, they contemplate self-harm, they are self-harming, they, like, what an opportunity for us to say, like Jesus, come here, all who are weary and heavy laden, you'll find rest for your soul.
That's right, that's it.
We're going to point you to the one that can give rest to your soul. And so whether you're just at a church, or you lead in a church, or you're weary yourself, hear the good news, the hope that Christ, there's nothing in your life Jesus wants distance from.
That's right.
Maybe especially that thing you would like distance from concerning him. And so he's so generous and kind that way. So thanks for listening to this episode of The Overcomers. We'll see you next time. God bless.
Peace.
Thanks, guys.
Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in to The Overcomers. I just pray your heart is always encouraged in the Lord. Really, the ministry I feel God's called me to in this season is to be one that's encouraging you, telling you the Lord sees you, reminding you of the opportunities that we have as the people of God in this day. And so The Overcomers podcast is one of the ways I do that. Another way is that I'm sending out a monthly newsletter. And in that, I've got a little audio link for kind of things I'm thinking about and wrestling through that I'm not necessarily preaching on. And so in the show notes is a link where you can go and sign up for that monthly email. And so, man, if The Overcomers is encouraging you, I would encourage you then to click on that link, sign up for the newsletter. And it's a way for me to further encourage you as you seek to live as overcomers in this current moment.